supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, a question of the week our producer thinks is foul. What to do when and if tree roots grow into your sewer line? It can make a mess that you never want to see. We'll tell you what to do about it after lots of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Richard, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Like you said, this is Richard. I live in Hacienda Heights, California. It's about 15 miles east of downtown L.A.
Okay, east. So you're away east from the ocean. You're towards the Central Valley. But that's a hot place right now, Richard. You're not getting any rain, are you, pal?
Oh, we haven't seen rain. And I'm literally a decent rainy season since 2004 or 2005, if you can believe it. It's been a real nightmare for us.
You're out, and right now, I mean, my heart goes out to you guys. I mean, it's got to be tough to be a gardener.
There's interesting ways to save water, and I read a report today that we did well this last month, a 13% reduction statewide, which is good news, better than what we've been doing, I can tell you that.
You got to walk before you can run. So what can we do for you, Rich?
Well, listen, I got an interesting question. It's really not a gardening question. It's a lawn question, as you know, which people are probably going, why would you want to talk about his lawn? But I do. I have St. Augustine grass, and I love it. It's a beautiful front lawn. I don't have to water it, but maybe twice a week, and that's at night, and very little, and it's beautiful, and it gets a lot of sun. Now, my back lawn has this immense Italian stone pine growing over it, and then, of course, it gets bigger every year. 10 years ago, I could see it slowly fading away, and now we're just down to a muddy area, basically, that the dogs love, and there's just a, how can I put it, like a cobweb of roots underneath.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it's all St. Augustine. Now, the reason I called is the question I have is, is there anything, any kind of lawn that can grow under a large pine tree?
Not in your climate. See, what people don't realize, when they look at a lawn struggling underneath a tree, they think it's the shade being cast by the tree. But in,
that's what I said.
Yeah, it's the roots of the tree. Trees are bullies. Trees have evolved to dominate the world of plants. So your big, beautiful specimen pine, which I want you to stay in love with, because that's the plant that has the chance to survive the situation you're going through, its roots eat first. It will always get the water. It'll suck up the water before your lawn can use it. And so when you see your lawn browning out further and further away from the tree, that means the tree is going further and further away, sending feeder roots out sideways to look for moisture. And as it does so, it's outcompeting the lawn. And if the feeder roots are a very dense webbing, it will actually beat up the lawn and overtake the lawn underground. And what you're going to have to do is what a lot of people in California are doing right now. I believe you will even qualify for a rebate if you allow that lawn to die and you do a system of what's called permeable pavers, nice walkways that you can walk on. But they're constructed in such a way that when it does rain, the water goes through them, so it's not an impervious surface. There can be areas between the pavers that you can make as wide as you think you can handle, and in those areas in between the pavers, there are many species of low-growing, drought-resistant plants. So imagine that backyard now with a series of walkways, And with greenery growing up in between the walkways that is not as drought sensitive as the grass and can coexist with the roots of the trees. There are many, many low growing plants that are going to look great out there. You'll never have to cut them, and any watering you do out there would be reduced, you know, down to 10% of whatever you're doing now. But I can assure you that that lawn does not have a chance. You could throw water and fertilizer on it from now, to the end of the world, and it's not going to help.
Well, I didn't get the answer I'd wanted, but I'm not surprised by the answer at all.
All right. Well, I think it's the right answer. This is an answer I have more confidence in than a lot of them, Rich.
Well, thank you. I enjoy your show very much.
All right. We love being on down there. Good luck, guys. Pray for rain.
All right. Pray for rain. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Mimi, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike. I've been listening to you for a long time and hope you can help me with this problem.
Well, I hope you keep listening for an even longer time, and I will do my best. Where are you, Meme?
I'm in Wallingford, PA, Media.
Right, just outside of Philadelphia.
And my problem has to do with knockout roses, which I bought thinking they were going to be disease and pest-free.
Right.
But mine are not. I have three large bushes that have lots of roses and lots of growth, but for the last three springs, the leaves start out early in the spring with like a beige spots on them, and then the leaves get holes. I mean, almost to lacy looking.
Mm-hmm.
And it really doesn't look very good, and I'm not happy. I go around looking at other people's knockouts, and they don't have that. So I'm wondering what's wrong with my garden.
Well, you know, that is the intelligent question to ask, actually, because generally, when it comes to almost any plant, the problem does tend to be cultural, in that we're doing something wrong for the plant or we're not giving the plant what it wants. However, I will warn you that our friend the dirt doctor, Howard Garrett, down in Texas, fears that knockouts have been overplanted and there's just too many of them out there. And that's kind of an invitation for pests and disease to develop the ability to attack them. They were certainly bred to be not so much pest-free, that's difficult, but they were bred to be disease-free roses.
Okay.
And, you know, in the world of nature, that's almost a challenge, you know?
Well, I don't know if mine is a disease or a pest. I've looked morning, noon, and night under the leaves, around the leaves, and I don't see any little creepy, crawly things at all.
Okay, good, good. Okay, do you prune your roses?
Yes.
When do you prune them?
Well, I heard you last week, and I pruned them at the wrong time. I pruned them in the fall.
Ah, okay. So one of the things you're doing with that fall pruning is you are taking a lot of the inherent energy out of the root system,
mm-hmm,
and wasting it and weakening the plant. So
I won't do it anymore.
Right. Roses should be pruned in the spring, about 2 weeks after they start growing again.
Right.
It's very good for them. What shape are they in right now? What do you see on them?
What do I see? I see now the upper part has pretty good leaves that are fairly whole. The
right.
Lower part, which I guess are the older leaves, they're lacy.
Okay.
It's not from the outside of the leaf. It's not like something took a bite out of the leaf. It's like from the inside.
Which is typical of, quote, Japanese beetle damage. But I don't think the beetles are quite out yet, and they're very visible during the day.
Right.
They're not out. Now, you said you've been out at night. There is a...
Well, not in the dark, but, you know, dusk.
Okay, because there is a scarab beetle. That's the general family the Japanese beetles are in. And it looks like a Japanese beetle, but it's totally nocturnal. So, like slugs, it kind of gets away with murder because it's doing its work at night.
Oh, so, like the real... dark night.
Yes, exactly. Again, like slugs, you know, a lot of times slug damage never gets identified the culprit because they're only out at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, like college students. So Here's what I want you to do. Anytime you have leaves that are eaten or discolored on your roses, remove them. For two reasons. First, there could be a disease going on here, and you want to make sure the disease doesn't spread. More importantly, it's going to make your roses look better to you and your neighbors. It's going to make you look like you're doing a much better job. So this is not a bad time of year to give them a little pruning.
Oh, okay.
You know, if you have, you should have roses in bloom right now, right?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. So don't be afraid to cut those and bring those inside for display and give the plants a good pruning now. Take off any areas that have a lot of damage. Even if an area does not have damage, just prune it back a couple of inches just to stimulate some new growth. And then try to catch some of these creatures at night. See what you're up against. But I think we're on to something.
Okay, great.
All
Thanks
right.
for the advice. I appreciate it.
All right, good luck, Mimi.
I'm on the hunt.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody with a cool season lawn like bluegrass or fescue that, quote, summer guard means you should guard your lawn against summer feedings. Fertilizer applied in the summer heat just burns up cool season turf. But don't go looking for all the details at the Garden Answers A to Z section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with what to do when you get backed up and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, makers of Biotone Starter Plus for new transplants, full of beneficial microbes and mycorrhiza for deeper roots and stronger plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929. And MoleZap and AntZap. The onset of spring also means the return of pests. MoleZap and AntZap's OMRI-listed organic, child, and pet-safe solutions are designed to leave no runoff or chemical residue. More at AntZap.com and MoleZap.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, when people have a backup in their sewer line and they find out it's tree roots, they blame the tree. Well, guess what? They're wrong. We'll explain why it happens and what you can do when it happens after lots more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Christine, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky today, Christine. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's a beautiful day.
And where is Christine doing well?
In Princeton, New Jersey.
Oh, where it's always a beautiful day. What can we do for Christine and the Garden State?
Well, I was listening to you a couple of weeks ago, and I heard you mention the use of kaolin clay to deter squirrel damage on tomato plants. And I wanted to let you know that I've had some success with that.
Oh, okay. Yes, we had a question of the week on how to keep squirrels off of, quote, fruits. We had one question that was about an apple tree, and we had another question that was about tomatoes. And I think what I said is I have 8 peach trees, and, of course, they have to be protected against pests and disease. And I've noticed that since I've started spraying them with clay a couple times a year, I don't get squirrels filching the peaches the way I used to. And I wondered if perhaps that might translate to other fruits as well. So did you spray your tomatoes with clay to protect them against insects and disease, or against the long-tailed servants of Satan right off the bit?
No, I was using it specifically for the long-tailed serpents of Satan. I tend a vegetable and herb garden for a golf club here, and squirrels love to run up to the kitchen, and they get fed scraps. And
the worst!
So, you know, then they run into the garden, and they snack on a little bit of salad, and I would find a whole beautiful, almost ripe, you know, jumbo tomato with a few bites out of it lying on the ground every day.
Right, right. Researchers have determined that evil squirrels do not even like tomatoes. And it's not even lack of water, the way some people postulated.
Really?
It is just that they are evil. And they know that taking a single bite out of every tomato will bring the homeowner running out in their underwear, waving brooms and screaming and yelling and putting on a good show for all the squirrels that you will then notice are sitting up on the telephone pole or in a tree applauding.
Right. Well, I used it when the tomato plants were about 4 feet high and you could see the fruits developing on the bottom, and they would always filch the low-hanging fruit. I had tried surrounding it with bird netting and other, you know, physical barriers, but it didn't seem to deter them. And I thought, well, maybe if this doesn't taste good to them, they'll leave it alone. And it really made a significant difference. I just sprayed the bottom of the plants up to about 3 feet, you know, twice to begin with, and waited. And it had the deterrent effect. And so I really never sprayed the rest of the tomato plants as they grew. And it's easily washed off.
Right. Yes. No, the clay sprays are tremendously effective. And with tomato plants being prone to so many diseases and occasional insect attack, there's absolutely no reason not to spray the plants with clay because, as you say, the clay spray easily washes off inside. It doesn't have any kind of taste or anything like that. But research has shown that insects don't like to even land on the clay, that you know, it's kind of, it feels funny to them or something. It's one of the most common sense solutions to such a wide variety of problems. And since it seems to be keeping evil squirrels at bay, I think it ought to get a Nobel Prize or a genius grant or something, you know?
I have to agree with you. I think it has a lot of good purposes.
And tell that kitchen staff to stop feeding the squirrels.
I do all the time.
It's kind of like inviting anthrax to come for dinner. What are they thinking?
They're so cute.
No, they're not. No, they're not. They are demons with fur. They are the servants of Satan. They are evil, evil, evil. All right, Christine. Well, thank you for that report. Clay spray foils squirrels. You made my day.
Thank you, Mike. It was a pleasure talking to you.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Jeff, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, thank you, Jeff. How are you, sir?
I'm great, thank you.
And where is Jeff great?
Oklahoma.
What part, sir?
Northeastern Oklahoma. We're up in the extreme northeast section that is very green and very wet.
Okay, yeah, excellent. Yeah. Good, so it's you picked the right part of Oklahoma there.
Yeah, it's excellent cattle country, some of the best in the world, I can promise you that.
All right, what can we do for Jeff up in northeast Oklahoma?
Well, you know, I was listening last week to one of your listeners had called in talking about antibiotics with cattle, and you know, I just about fell out of my tractor on Sunday morning. I listened to it on KRPS, and, you know, for her to say that, that the current cattle system does not include antibiotics is did not sound right to me, you know.
I was totally blindsided by that call. I was not expecting it.
Yeah.
The only thing I saw on my screen is somebody wanted to talk about using manure in the garden,
right.
which is a topic that I know a lot about. I mean, the show is composed largely of manure. And so I thought, you know, I was going to give them the old warnings about, you know, don't use excessive amounts of horse manure with flowering plants. And then when we get to, quote, cow manure, especially over the last decade, I've become more and more concerned about not only the medications, but the conditions these animals are raised in. You know, I don't know that I want to use manure from an unhappy animal, if you know what I mean.
Well, certainly. So, you know, the question for people like me that are in this business to raise beef is I want you to be able to feel good about the meat you eat. And we do, we're trying to do that here, but the overwhelming majority of beef raised in this country is not raised to the conditions, in the conditions that most people would be comfortable with, and that is a sad fact. I mean, it is true. But for her to make a broad generalization about the beef industry and that you're being unfair talking about antibiotics or hormones or even some of the herbicide chemicals that cows are ingesting, for her to claim that you're being unreasonable is just simply incorrect at all, because I think you're right on.
So you have a cattle farm?
Yeah, I am fourth generation, rather large cattle ranch here. We run cow-calf, and we are vertically integrating, meaning that we raise the calf, then go ahead and put them into our own private feed yard and finish them out to when they're finished for consumption.
And is your philosophy to limit medications to the minimum? Are you sustainable? Are you organic? What do you call yourself?
I am raising beef without antibiotics, and I've, for the most part, I am involved with a company that markets antibiotic-free beef.
Okay.
And so we raise cattle for them under strict guidelines in terms of what we can put in them, and absolutely no antibiotics in their lifetime. If I have an animal that I have to treat for sickness, then that animal is no longer eligible for that program. So I have to keep detailed records, and there's an economic premium for me to do this. But most people, you know, this is a small niche in the beef industry.
All I know is that I used to be a medical reporter, and years ago we started buying strictly organic milk and meat. And after that, as I read more and more, we moved on to not only organic but grass-fed so that we were really comfortable with what we were getting. To me, it's just like organic gardening. I mean, you want the least amount of technology between you and your food. We can't lose this ability to do it ourselves. I mean, it's a very natural process. It can, all parts of it can be done beautifully and sustainably. You just need the will.
Yes. You know, the consumer's going to have to start telling us what they want and be definite about it, so there becomes some more economic incentives for or disincentives to use or not use certain products.
I think your market is only going to grow, and if I were in Oklahoma, I'd come and get your manure. All right. Well, thank you, Jeff. It's good to hear from you, sir.
All right. Good talk to you. Love your show.
Take care, sir.
All right. Thank you.
1-888-346-9499. Harold, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Harold.
Well, this is a pleasure. We listen to you all the time, sir.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to talk to somebody in such a good mood. Where are you, sir?
And, well, our home is in the most northern part of the Bronx, New York, in the, what we refer to as the Riverdale section.
Oh, sure. That's where Archie and Jughead are from.
Yes, yes.
Okay, yes. Very good. In the Bronx, when I worked for Marvel Comics in 1971, I lived at 203rd and Rochambeau in the Gun Hill Road section of the Bronx.
Yes. Yes.
All right, so I know it well. What can we do for Harold in the Bronx?
Thank you. We have in the front, we have like a private home, and the front part of it is a lot of grass and stuff. Just this summer, we just realized, this spring, summer, we just realized there's about 20 square feet of poison ivy.
Mm.
And not sure how to get rid of it.
Now, you say 20 square feet. Poison ivy is a vine.
Right.
Most of the time. Most of the time it'll grow up fencing or trees or wrap around other plants.
It's beginning to do that. It's like it's basically growing on the ground.
Right.
Around other vines that we have in the front. But it's slowly beginning to like crawl up on some of the like flower.
Right,
okay.
Right, so we don't want to let this go on. Now, the vines that it's growing around, are they wanted plants?
They are, they're like ground cover almost. I'm not even sure what they are.
This is going to be, you know, I'm going to be honest with you, Harold. This is going to be difficult. Now, are you sensitive to poison ivy?
When I was a kid, I don't think a summer passed where I didn't get some poison ivy.
Okay.
Nobody else in the family seems to be, but I haven't had it in like 30 years, so maybe I'm not anymore. I have no idea.
Yeah, allergies do change over time, but it is a true allergic reaction. So you got two options. One is to hire a landscaper who will suit up and remove it physically. The other option is for you to remove it physically. One thing I always have to warn people about is even if you don't care about using chemicals personally, chemicals don't work against poison ivy.
Right.
They will kill the plant and make it brown, but the oil is still there. But now it doesn't look as obvious or dangerous. It's much easier to get poison ivy from a plant that's been herbicide than from a fresh one.
Right.
So I'll tell you how I would do it if I were you. I would wait until pouring rain. And then either at the very end of the rain or right after it, I would go out with a rolling trash can or a big trash bag and every plastic bag that you've got stored in wherever you keep your plastic bags from the mall and the supermarket.
Yes, sir.
Wear long sleeves, long gloves. Wear long sleeves, long pants, and when the poison ivy is wet, you know, when the ground is wet and the plants are wet, what you do is slip a plastic bag over each hand and then find where each vine goes into the soil and very slowly pull it out. If the soil is really saturated, the root system will come out really easily. And then you just pull the one plastic bag down using the other plastic bagged hand, and then you've got the vine inside two plastic bags that you haven't touched. You put that in the trash, and then you put on fresh bags, and you move on to the next one. I know it seems like it would take forever, but my property was totally covered with poison ivy top to bottom when we bought it, and it took me a couple of weeks of working, like maybe 20 minutes every third day,
right,
to get rid of it completely. And have a hose there.
Yep.
And if you think you may have touched yourself with any vines, just rinse that part of your body off with cold water.
Right.
Cold water dissolves the oil. Then obviously seal up the bag, you know, put it out in the trash. And when you go inside, still be wearing plastic bags, fresh plastic bags, to open up the doorknobs and everything.
Yes.
Take all your clothes, put them in the washing machine, run them on cold water, just to rinse them off, and then you go in the shower and rinse yourself off with cool water. No soap, no washcloth. You should be completely good. If you see new plants, little baby plants coming up in the future,
yes,
you can just put pure white vinegar, the strongest white vinegar you can find, in a spray bottle. And
right.
When it's hot and sunny out, just cover the leaf of the poison ivy with sprays of vinegar. And if the plant is just like a little baby, it'll shrivel up and die.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much, sir.
It is a lot easier than it sounds, and it's really the only way. Poison ivy is a Native American plant. It was always here, and it's a very important plant for birds. We never see the berries.
Right.
But they do, and they eat the berries, and that's how the poison ivy spreads. So it you can never get rid of it completely in North America. It's always going to show up again. But once you get the big plants out of there, the little baby plants are really easy to control after that.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Harold. You have a good summer, sir.
You too.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody who planted garlic last fall that the time to harvest is when the bottom third of the plants have turned brown. Don't let the entire plant turn brown, or you'll get what looks like George Washington's old teeth down there. But don't go looking for all the details in the Garden Answers A to Z section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with what to do when you get backed up and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by Burpee, celebrating their 139th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, fruits of all kinds, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com. And the Espoma Company, makers of Biotone Starter Plus for new transplants, full of beneficial microbes and mycorrhiza for deeper roots and stronger plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will tell you what to do and what is going on when tree roots grow into your sewer line. It's a terrible problem, and it's a very common problem, and we'll help you solve it. We'll also take more of your fabulous phone calls right after this.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by Burpee, celebrating their 139th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, fruits of all kinds, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com and MoleZap and AntZap. The onset of spring also means the return of pests. MoleZap and AntZap's OMRI-listed organic, child and pet-safe solutions are designed to leave no runoff or chemical residue. More at AntZap.com and MoleZap.com.
1-888-346-9499. Ted, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Good to be on the air.
Oh, thank you for being here with me, Ted. Where are you, sir?
We're in the north central part of Pennsylvania called Lock Haven. We're along the west branch of the Susquehanna.
What a magnificent river.
It is. It's fascinating. And what is also fascinating, it's the longest non-navigable river, I think, in Pennsylvania, but maybe even in the east.
Oh, that's interesting. All right. What can we do for Ted in Lock Haven?
What we've got is bird seed underneath the feeders, and it's pretty deep. I can take probably 1 to 2 wheelbarrows full of this fallen seed over the winter, and I want to know what I could do with it best. Or is it simply just dangerous, or is it just going to be weeds forever, or how do we handle this?
You are feeding the birds?
Yes, we are feeding the birds.
Okay. See, my philosophy as an organic gardener is I don't ever want to feed seed. I put out enormous numbers of suet feeders in the winter. And that way I get carnivorous birds. I get great birds, believe it or not. And now I'm bragging. We always get lots of chickadees and nutthatches and wrens. And I was up to like my 6th different type of woodpecker this winter. Even though I know it's crazy, I had a pileated woodpecker at one of my suet feeders.
Wow.
You know, one of the woody woodpecker types.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You hear stories about how large these birds are, but until you got one of them digging suet from a cage on a tree, it is just amazing.
I agree.
But the reason I do that is then I stop feeding suet in the spring when the weather warms up. And, you know, the birds don't move. They already live there. They already have their children registered in the local schools. And they then eat all the pests that would otherwise overwinter under the bark of my fruit trees.
Yes.
Now, I know a lot of people like to feed seed, but it is very important not to let the seed drop on the ground. All you need for this is to switch over to feeders that actually catch the drop seed.
Okay.
And this is important for a number of reasons. The first reason is you're probably feeding a lot of sunflower seed, right?
Yes, black oil.
Sunflowers are a little bit like black walnuts in that they naturally contain, especially the seeds, compounds that can inhibit the growth of other plants.
Oh.
So when sunflowers spill out of a feeder, they can often stunt the growth or kill some susceptible nearby plants. It also means that that's not the best material to put into a compost pile because it would be like making compost out of nothing but black walnut leaves. The compost could have negative effects on plants through this allopathic, allopathic kind of sequencing. The second and perhaps most important reason is any seed that spills onto the ground is going to attract mice, rats, and voles. And you really don't want that to happen. So for my mind, the best answer would be to get one of these feeders that is like a no-mess feeder that has all these different baffles and stuff that keeps the seed from getting on the ground. And then I would recycle the good seed back into the feeder. As to what to do with the shells and stuff like that, that gets really hard when you're feeding sunflower. And of all the bird seed that you can feed, I think sunflower is the closest to suet. It has the highest fat and protein that birds really need to survive the winter. And I wouldn't want to put any of the wasted seed into a compost pile. And I wouldn't want to throw it into the woods either, because there can be non-native seeds in there that can become problematic. So my advice is to mostly recapture the spilled seeds, keep putting those in the feeder, which is going to save you money. And again, ensure you don't develop vermin problems down at the bottom.
And I have a lot of squirrels that pick up a lot of the stuff that fell, too. So you'll love that. I mean, I actually feed probably 7 or 8 squirrels each winter.
And it's fun to try to get a squirrel-proof feeder to see how long it takes them to defeat it.
I've done a lot of little experiments, and most of them don't work.
Yeah. It is really important to keep it off the ground. You really don't want to be bringing vermin near your house. All right, Ted?
Well, thank you, Mike. I really appreciate it.
All right. Great call. Great question. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Kellen, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. Thank you so much for talking with me.
Well, thank you for making the call, Kellen. Where are you, sir?
I am in East Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Oh, an interesting place to be. What can we do for Kellen in East Grand Rapids?
We bought our first house September of last year.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And I have a ton of questions, but my main reason for calling is the lawn. I wasn't going to do anything this year. We got started late, so I didn't get corn gluten meal down like I wanted to. Plus, we live on this block where it has tons of huge old trees. So it was pretty much all shade. The neighbors next door just cut down a huge tree, so actually we're getting a decent amount of sun. Then the local True Green guy came to the door and really loudly in front of all the neighbors pointed out all of my weeds that I have in the yard. And I said, listen, I know you use chemicals. I don't want to use chemicals. And he said that they have a new system called True Natural, which is supposedly all 100% natural, using a mixture of fish emulsion, bone meal, feather meal, and maybe a couple other things. And I wanted to see what your take on that would be.
Bone meal would be unnecessary for a lawn. That's kind of a source of phosphorus, and we don't need any more phosphorus on lawns, even from a natural source. The fish emulsion and the feather meal are good sources of nitrogen, so they'd be fine. They'd be good natural foods, but they would only be used to feed your lawn, which in the climate you're in, and considering the fact that there's still probably a fair amount of shade on your lawn is going to be a very light feeder. Fertilizer alone is not going to do it. And one of the issues with lawn care companies is they need to come by more often than necessary to be able to charge enough to make it worth their while. So it's really, most of the times it's not really sustainable unless it's like a local guy you can work out that he just comes a couple of times a year. Are there bare spots?
There are some. There's a lot of kind of broadleaf weeds, and then there are some mossy spots as well.
The moss tells me that you do need to put down lime or wood ash. The moss is a sign that your soil is very acidic, and you live in a fairly wet climate, and we're going to presume that the lawn does not drain well. So the first thing you want to do if you want to encourage grass growth, and you could even do this now, is to put down some lime, or in your climate, again, a lot of people burn wood for the winter. If you have access to wood ash, that's much better for your lawn, and it'll raise the pH. And then if you want, in the fall, which for you I'm going to think is like August 10th to the end of August, if you want to do anything, I would recommend you have a big load of compost delivered. Actually, I would recommend, first of all, you get your lawn core aerated. Pull out plugs to relieve the soil compaction. I just, in your area, it's so wet that I got to believe that your lawn could use better drainage. After you would get a core aerated, you would have a big load of premium topsoil or compost delivered, and then spread seed in that is going to work well in your environment. You've really got to measure the hours of sunlight you get on that lawn a day at midsummer, and be honest. If it's under 4 hours, you know, it's really not going to support any kind of grass. If it's between 4 and 6, you can get a nice fescue mix and it'll take nicely. Then with having relieved the soil compaction, having a nice seed bed, and starting at the right time of year for a cool season grass, which is the end of the summer, beginning of fall, you should have a nice stand of grass in the springtime. And then I would recommend you make sure you have a very sharp blade. Mulching lawnmower would be best. leave your clippings on the lawn, never cut it below 3 inches. And quite honestly, man, in your climate, if you put down a rich seed bed now, I honestly don't think it's going to need to be fed. It should be self-sustaining if you leave the clippings where they lie, because they're 10% nitrogen. You'll be feeding the lawn every time you cut it.
Nice.
All right, so good luck with your new lawn, and I think you're going to do great, man.
Thank you so much, Mike.
All right, take care. All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. What to do when tree roots grow into a sewer line? Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, read us this week's so tasteful question, if you please. She said it's the grossest question of the week ever, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I'm a little nervous about this, but here we go. Luke, who handles the books at Mulhall's Nursery in Omaha, writes, I purchased an older home with a 40-year-old maple tree planted near the house. The previous owner told us that the sewer line had backed up due to the roots of the maple growing into the line. She said she had the pipes cleared with an auger and did not have any further problems, but I'm sure it won't be long before those roots go back into the pipe to gain access to that ample supply of water and nitrogen. Is there anything I can do to prevent this besides flushing nasty chemicals down the toilet or cutting down the tree?
Whoa there, Paul Bunyan. It'd cost several thousand dollars to have a 40-year-old tree safely cut down, maybe even more depending on the proximity of nearby structures and power lines. And that's only if you leave the stump in the ground. If you get that stump pulled, you add to the cost and you probably ensure the final destruction of that sewer pipe.
So, Mike, what should he do? Isn't the tree going to keep invading that pipe?
Going to it, yes. Invading it, no. I spoke with William Eck, an arborist with the Bartlett Expert Tree Company, who confirmed my long-held belief that the fault, dear Brutus, is not in our trees, but in our pipes.
Wow, so you're saying the tree roots didn't break the pipe?
They did not. Although Bill and I both like the Marvel Comics image of a massive root crushing the pipe, it is the pipe that broke first. Then came the roots of Groot. As Bill explains, an older home like this is going to have clay pipe taking the wastewater away. A lot of these pipes went into the ground with cracks. Others were cracked when the tons of dirt were pushed on top to bury them. So the nutrient-rich, shall we say, water trickles out. One of the fine feeder roots of the tree encounters that wet zone. It grows towards the water source, and then it sends back for silverware, condiments, and a napkin.
And before too long, that little root gets big from all the moisture and nutrients,
eventually growing into the crack, making it even wider. And once those roots get fully inside, warns Bill, they can grow very quickly.
So is cleaning the pipe with an auger the correct response?
Absolutely, absolutely. These problems are only discovered when the roots seal the inside of the pipe and sewage starts backing up into the house.
Ew.
Ew, indeed. But cleaning the pipe is just a temporary solution. New roots are going to grow right back in. And the physical trauma of that cleaning may create new and bigger cracks.
What about the chemicals you flush to kill the roots?
Bill says that some of them can be incredibly corrosive. Yeah, they'll kill the roots for a time, but they're also going to accelerate the destruction of the pipe and potentially damage indoor plumbing lines as they go out from your toity to the tree. And they're highly destructive at the end of their journey, causing problems at water treatment plants and or killing the biological life that keeps your septic tank functioning well.
Okay, so they're not even a one-time solution.
No. Now, the best long-term solution is to find a plumber who can insert a flexible pipe with a slightly smaller diameter into the existing pipe. This technology is widely available, but some plumbers are going to balk at narrowing any kind of pipe. And, of course, it has to be legal under your local building codes. But it is the most sensible, cost-effective, and sustainable solution.
But what if it's not legal where you live?
Well, then you're going to have to dig up and replace the leaky pipe. And, of course, careless trench digging at this juncture could kill the tree.
And you're back to a $3,000 pile of wood chips.
That's why you want to involve the added expertise of a real arborist at this point. They can work with the excavator to avoid the most important roots, and they can professionally prune any roots that can't be avoided. They can also use a really cool device called an air spade to safely expose the roots so everybody can see exactly what they're doing.
An air spade?
Oh, they're super cool. I learned about them when I presented at Bartlett's Professional Tree Care Symposium during the Philly Flower Show this spring. It's a tool that uses compressed air to blow away soil and expose the roots of a tree before there's any digging. They're often used to try and save volcano-mulched trees. The compressed air blows away those smothering layers of mulch, and then it can also expose the top of the root flare if the tree was also planted too deeply.
So this is a two-professional job, someone to dig up and replace the pipe and an arborist to protect the tree while the work is done.
Exactly. And then you have to be sure to test for leaks before you cover up that new pipe. As long as everything is sealed nice and tight, Groot will not be returning any more of your presents to the basement floor. Well, that sure was some great advice about keeping your flow going now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to stick pinholes in my pipe, and if I don't get out of this studio, we must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499, or send us your email with your location at garden@whyy.org. Oh, and please include your location, especially if you're sure that we don't need your location. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares about your location, but where you will find the answers to all of your garden questions, as well as audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Parazuna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and like us at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Rich Banowitz keeps our website running. Clogged Up Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Free-flowing Al Banks is our editor. Working the phones is the one, the only, Stephen Drehobull. That's Dre like the horse, Ho like the tool, and Bull like the animal. We also want to offer special thanks to Keani from Cristo Rey High School, who has been helping us for quite a while, and this is her last day, boo-hoo. People come and go so quickly around here. I'm firmly rooted Mike McGrath, and I'll see your air spade, and I'll raise you a queen of the night, a jack in the pulpit, and a pair of bleeding hearts. Then I'll see you again next week. Is it possible to rescue a tree that was planted with its roots all wrapped up? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll bravely battle on behalf of the bald and burlapped. Plus your fabulous phone calls.